this is on Senate Bill 221. Is there anybody else on 221 besides?
216.
On 216.
Kaczynski, State Representative Marion Pope County. So you have, committee members have the 216A-4 amendments. And
yep.
my understanding that the National Department of Justice have signed off on these amendments.
I'm Bill Nestle from the Department of Justice. That is correct.
Yeah, can you wait a second? I'm not sure the tapes are on. Are the tapes?
Yes, I started recording.
Okay, good. I'm sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Bill Nestle representing the Oregon Department of Justice, and we have reached agreement with the Judicial Department with respect to the amendments that are before the committee right now.
Okay, would you explain what the amendment means?
Mr. Chair, members, purpose of the amendments is to clarify in the statute that in mandamus proceedings that the risk management fund or regular insurance fund for the state will cover the reasonable defense expenditures for and indemnify the liabilities. Essentially what we're talking about here is mainly judges and sometimes once in a while a court employee will there'll be a mandamus action against them. And poor Mr. Nestle, in my prior testimony, had to work through a 13-page attorney AG opinion that he did the draft for, which said, essentially that it would be the cost of these proceedings would not be covered under the regular risk management pool. And this opinion just came out a week ago at this point. The fiscal impact of that Attorney General's opinion on the Judicial Department's budget is about $98,000. By adopting this amendment and bill passing, the department would save about $98,000, which is not anticipated in their budget. So, in other words, they come whole. Bill, is that a fair representation of?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is correct. I believe that the committee will recall that in the end of May, we delivered copies of that Attorney General's opinion to the committee.
Right. Okay. Any questions? Ms. Bowen? I think what we're going to do, I'll take these amendments under advisement at this point. We'll set it aside until I get another member, and then
Great. We
can go ahead and move that. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, let's go to... Let's go to Senate Bill 746. Are you all here to get what just got come up here? Somebody want to lead off on testimony here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the panel, my name is Eric Langford, Lieutenant of Plain County Sheriff's Department. I'm here on behalf of Senate Bill 746. This bill, if passed, would enable law enforcement officers in unincorporated areas of the state to take enforcement action using existing state statutes that relate to parking, but be able to take enforcement action against the registered owner of a vehicle that's illegally parked. Currently, we're faced with a situation wherein a vehicle that's found to be parked in violation of the law, an enforcement action is practically impossible since the law requires you cite the operator. The operator's not present with an illegally parked car. We have several areas in Lane County where this poses a significant problem, particularly around recreational areas and around schools where people park in violations of no parking signs and create sight distance problems and require people to walk on the roadway instead of along the shoulder of the roadway. So I would urge your support of that bill.
I tell you that presently you don't have that authority in unincorporated area counties. Don't have that authority. How did that ever happen? I'm sorry, I don't want to. Somebody
wants to. Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, my name is Dave Burks. I'm sheriff of Lane County. I'm here representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association as well as my own office. In answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, currently in unincorporated areas, as I understand it, you can only cite in handicapped, illegally parked in handicapped areas, parking and in snow zones. There are snow zones in that are posted, and you can cite the registered owner of the vehicle in those areas, I'm told. We do not have the ability that the city police have, for instance, at a parking meter. They cite the legal, the registered owner of the vehicle there, and we cannot do that if a similar situation occurs in the county. Obviously, we don't have parking meters, but we have no parking signs. And it does create throughout the state numerous problems, particularly at recreational areas. So in answer to your question, we do not currently have that authority, General.
Mr. Chairman.
Members
about. What do you do currently?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bauman, what we used to do when we had lots of personnel is set and wait for the driver. But unfortunately, we've suffered a lot of cutbacks throughout the state, and particularly in Lane County, and we just don't have the person power to sit there and wait for the driver to come back. So the vehicles parked on both sides of the road create safety problems, and we'd like to be able to have a tool to get their attention. I don't think it'll take much, but we would like to have that ability. There is a safeguard built into the bill that would protect the registered owner who had sold the vehicle with reference to a certified letter. That was an amendment, I believe, put in the, by the Senate.
Stevenson, did you want to say something?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lieutenant James H. Stevenson, assigned to the Patrol Division of the Oregon State Police. The Oregon State Police are supportive of Senate Bill 746, and that under current law, an officer would have to observe the person park the vehicle before action in the form of a citation can be issued to the driver. This legislation would allow a citation to be issued to the registered owner of the vehicle if the officer does not observe a person park the vehicle. Under current law, the only provision provided for citing the registered owner outside the city is in snow park and disabled parking violations. That concludes my testimony. I'm glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Campbell, do you want to testify?
Well, if I may, I'd like to testify in favor of the bill. And I'd also like to offer an amendment, which I have been distributed. And what the amendment simply does is apply the emergency clause to Senate Bill 746. The reason for this is that one of the key problems in the area that I represent is the Flynn Ridge area. And the summer traffic and parking along that area is very dangerous. And by putting the emergency clause on, it would put this bill into effect at a time necessary to help with the law enforcement activity that's necessary in that particular area. I'm sure the same thing would apply to many other areas where similar problems exist. And really, it's the Orchard Point Road that possesses a real danger of those traveling in the Fern Ridge Reservoir area. I think that the testimony probably has already satisfied the needs that are identified, but I would appreciate consideration being given to placing the emergency clause in the bill.
Okay, fine. We have that. Mr. Miller, did you want to extend it?
Yes. I'm Don Miller, Fire Marshal, Lane Road Fire District, and I'd like to speak in behalf of the fire district and myself as a citizen in the area. We're already starting to be addressed with the problems in that area. Summer's starting to come on. I have to drive past that area to go to and from work. And we have had a number of cases in which emergency vehicles, other than police force, as far as ambulances and fire department apparatus, that we've had to come to a complete stop going through those areas because of the fact that we have cars parked on both sides. And people seem to think, well, heck, there is no reason to worry about it. They get out right there in your way, right in the lane of traffic. Take their kids, walk across the street. I mean, it's really embarrassing when a fire truck has to come to a complete stop and wait for them to go through so we can continue to go on to this emergency call that we're going to. And it's really hampered, particularly the Orchard Point area, which is what I'm trying to speak on behalf because we have it in our district. You have a 45-unit mobile home park right in congested in the area. You've got a marina right there. You've got a parking itself, and they're parking on both sides of the street. quite extensive length of the path. I would say, what, at least half a mile down through that stretch? They're alone in that one area. And it's complicated by the fact it's in a curve. And I just like to let you know that that is actually happening. It has happened in the past, and unless something's done about it, it's going to continue to happen.
Okay, fine. Are there any questions of the... Is there anyone else here to be heard on this motion, on this matter? If not, we are in work session. Is there a motion? Representative Miller.
I'd move Senate Bill 746 with the amendment, or maybe I'd move the amendments first. I'll move the dash two amendments to call for the emergency clause to 746.
President Miller moves to amend Senate Bill 746 with the dash two amendments, which is the emergency clause. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, so that's so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Miller.
I'd move Senate Bill 746 and Gross as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative moves Senate Bill 746 as amended to the full committee, due pass. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Bellman, aye. Miller?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would only like to comment that you guys certainly had a lineup that Panzer.
Mr. Nestle, you want to come back up?
No.
Oh, you're right, okay. As soon as I get Miller back in here, we'll get that down here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you guys let Miller get away from you out there?
I'm sorry?
Did Representative Miller get away from us out there?
They're having a little discussion with town.
Oh, come on, I need a vote.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 216A with the dash 4 amendments to the full committee with the due pass.
We adopt the amendments here first. So, Representative Bowen moves to amend Senate Bill 216 with the dash 4 amendments. Any discussion? Any objections? That's the order. You can move on the bill.
And I'd like to place the motion for the bill with the dash 4 amendments, Mr. Chair, to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Bowen moves Senate Bill 216 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? If not, clerk, call the roll.
Bowen, aye. Miller?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. You like getting the mental wrap here. I think Representative Phillips will be over in a minute, so I want to make sure he's here. So let's go to Senate Bill 546. Graham? Normal
procedure was to have the
proponents. Oh, that's right. You're here to your opposite. Well, Representative Wires is not here, so we're going to have someone present that to us. I'm looking at it. Looking for my bill. Nothing like moving rooms. Okay.
My name is Bill Avendroff. I'm a legislative assistant for Senator Jan Wires. He wasn't going to be able to be here, so he asked me to come and testify for him. What Senate Bill 546 does is allow for correct data collection on the arrests of prostitute buyers versus prostitute sellers. What you have in your folders, at least I hope you have it, I've dropped off copies of testimony from Susan Hunter, who coordinates the Council for Prostitution Alternatives, and a letter from a neighborhood crime prevention coordinator, Sherry McCormick, and a letter of support from Bob Koch, the city councilman for Portland. Right. The current problem with that Senate Bill 546 addresses is that prostitution, the buyers and sellers are included in the same statute. So the data that the police keep is only broken down by male arrests for prostitution and female arrests. Susan Hunter mentions in her testimony that males involved in prostitution arrests are, there's not a distinction made between buyers and the sellers. Arrest and prosecution records show women are more often arrested than men. The ratio for the first 11 months of 86 was nearly 4-1. All right, so what's beginning to happen is for the police to be able to show they're arresting more prostitute buyers. Instead, they arrest more juvenile sellers or the transsexuals who are also listed as men. The purpose of this bill was simply to split the statute, so there'll be two different statutes so we can get the kind of correct data. This is important because Sharon McCormick mentions in her letter a major issue in developing effective organizing strategies for anti-prostitution efforts is the need for clear information on buyers and sellers. This bill will be able to give us that kind of clear information. I would be happy to answer any of the questions that the committee may have.
In effect, then, this would make either solicitation or selling of sex as treated as a crime in the same manner.
It doesn't change the penalties at all. Both buyers and sellers are still Class A misdemeanor.
Okay. Are there any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Mrs. Ballin.
This whole logic is to change the record-keeping possibility.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bauman. Yes, currently what's happening is it's just the records are only being kept by male and female. This way, by creating a separate statute, we can keep track of prostitute buyer arrests and prostitute seller arrests.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you very much. Kit?
My name is Kit Graham, and I live in Yamhill County at 3530 Northeast Wilsonville Road. And I am here basically for the Oregon Federation of Business and Professional Women's Clubs, Incorporated of the USA, and of course for myself. My background on this issue started with the Portland City Club study of 1983-84, in which I did the minority report against legalization. You may recall that the City Club recommended legalization with zoning. And the course of that study, which was a very, very long one, by the way, I'm not going to read my paper because I assume you folks can read as well as I can. That study got us into the statistics, both at the district court and at the city of Portland, and we did discover the same difficulty that Senator Wires is concerned about, but on our request, because of the depth and the long-range study that was being done, the city and the court did furnish the City Club with all of the breakdowns. We even had breakdowns on prostitution-related crimes, such as loitering to solicit and that kind of thing. And as a matter of fact, that information is available to the public, and it's available to Susan Hunter and any citizen who wants it. It's hard work compared to this. But the main objection that I have to this, with that reason being the major cause for doing this bill, is that it simply will not have that effect. And the people who have said that it will have simply not checked far enough. Yesterday afternoon at 5 minutes after four, I called the sergeant in charge at North Precinct and asked him again, because I was afraid maybe I'd forgotten from my City Club study. And I said, and maybe the language that the gentleman before me just said is a clue, we'll give you a clue. Section 3, the new Section 3 that this bill proposes is not a new statute. It is the same number. It is a new section of the same number, and that's the problem. The only way that male buyers and male sellers will be on the annual listing separated will be if there is a completely different statute, because right now 167007 is the prostitution statute, and if this bill passes, that statute is still the number, and they're still going to put all males together and all females together. The city attorney in Portland also confirms that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
What is the current number for in the ORS for prostitution?
167007. And the new law here, what you've done, and that is what the proponents have done, is remove clause B from section 1 of 167007.
I understand that.
And they removed B and caused it to become section 3 instead.
Mr. Chair.
But it is section chair of the same statute.
Mr. Chair. No, it actually amends it into a different section of the statute.
That's my understanding.
Yes, sir, but it is the same statute number.
Yep,
go ahead, Mr. Bellman.
If we could look at section 2 together.
Right.
And if you could explain to me, first answer, if there are any of the consecutive numbers between 167.002 to 167.027, which are currently not being utilized, and whether that doesn't look to you, I'm asking you.
No, I mean, after months of study of the current statute, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to pretend to be more expert than I am. But section 2 simply means, and the current statute has a phrase like that in it too. That hasn't been real. All statutes have that in it. If there are many prostitution statutes, then this kind of change has to also be done with 167002, 167003, one, and so on, all the way up through 167027.
Mr. Chair.
Right.
Would your objection be satisfied if there were a way for us to make clear that we expect this to be assigned its own number within ORS 167002 to 167.027?
It would have to be. I don't think it would make me. It wouldn't satisfy me. But you also, there isn't any space there. You'd have to add.
I'm not asking you to do that. I'm only asking if that were possible.
No, I don't think it would. I'd like to go on. Yeah, it wouldn't. And the reason why it wouldn't is another. I wanted to address that first, because what is planned by this particular bill at this moment will not have the effect which is sought by the bill. When I first read the bill, my first reaction was, geez, this just doesn't do anything but take the beautiful sex-blind language out of the present law. And as you will tell if you read my paper, since I and my organization are passionately committed to equality of rights under law on all levels, federal, state, county, city, everything, we have a built-in distaste for the removal of Clause B from the definition of prostitution itself, and probably for what may be simplistic reasons. It obviously takes both a buyer and a seller to commit the act of prostitution, and to take the enormously fair language out of this. When no good is done from doing so, nothing is done is accomplished by doing this, just makes us rather ill.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second.
Yes, sir.
The language, and I think perhaps the difficulty that you're having with this is the way in which the legislation is written. And it's not, I don't think it's a problem of the legislation itself, because in Section 3, the language is exactly the same as what's been deleted in Clause B, and the effect of the legislation is to separate those two, put the same language back in. If you read what's in Section 3, it says the same thing as in Clause
B. I do understand that. I do understand that. It doesn't say the same thing, though. It says something different. It makes one kind of a crime for the buyer of prostitution. It is called patronizing a prostitute.
Right,
it makes another crime. It maintains another crime for the seller of prostitution. That's called prostitution.
They're both misdemeanors.
Hey, I'm not concerned about the penalties right now, sir. I'm concerned about the language, because prostitution itself has, since 1973, been a crime which is and can be and will always be committed by both the buyer and the seller. The excuse given for taking that language out of the statute and changing it into, we're going to have one crime when a female is involved in prostitution, we're going to call it heliotrope, and when a male is involved in prostitution, we're going to call it eggplant. We have gorgeous language, and the reason we care about the language, sir, is because women historically for over 100 years have been so blatantly discriminated against by Portland, not by the whole state, because Eugene, Oregon enforces the law exactly the way it is written and intended, and with very great success, which is how we know that the law works when it's done right. But Portland has never tried it yet. They won't even try it. And they discriminate so heavily against women that it has almost come to the point at which those of us who really care about this,
you know, you've talked to me before, and we've been through this one, because you don't remember me probably, but we had a discussion on this one, because
yes, I
was very much involved with that, with your side of the issue on the City Club report. But will you please point out to me where this makes this language sexist?
I'll do my best, sir, but I can't force you to hear me if you don't. This is the language that will remain. It will say,
yes, we have,
546. It will say 167-007-1, a person commits the crime of prostitution, A, if the person engages in or offers or agrees to engage in sexual conduct or sexual contact in return for a fee, period. That's what prostitution is. Now, you and I both know that that's not true.
What about the rest of it?
Hey, adding a section 3 in there that says a person commits the crime of patronizing a prostitute if the person pays or offers or agrees to pay a fee in to engage in sexual contact, that's another crime.
No.
That's not prostitution.
Right.
The definition of prostitution has been restricted to the seller only. Another thing that it's very hard to say everything that I want to say at once because there isn't enough time. You folks don't have enough time, and the whole legislature doesn't have enough time. But there is a very little difficulty, in fact, in telling the difference from the Portland statistics, even when they all group together, between sellers and buyers, male sellers and buyers, because the police don't arrest male sellers unless they're in drag, or unless it's one of those very special, once or twice a year, very heavily publicized crackdowns, and then they arrest everybody. And that's the only time we have equal enforcement in Portland, Oregon, is in those special crackdowns. And even with those one or two shot deals, maybe 14 days out of 365, even then, we have over 4-to-1 arrests of females over males. We don't have more female sellers than we do male. We got just as many male. They're in southwest Portland instead of northeast and north, but we've got just as many. The police know it. When I was on the City Club, I went to a neighborhood meeting one night and I asked three officers from North Precinct how long they thought it would take to stop this neighborhood problem, all of the congestion and all the difficulty in the Portland neighborhoods, if they arrested a buyer every time they arrested a seller. And all three officers almost in unison said, it about 2 weeks. And they laughed. And I said, why don't you? And that's why my paper is so thick, because I attached to it a case, a finding of fact, that was done in Portland. It's not new, but it's very typical. Very typical.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Yes, sir. Ma'am.
The downside risk of the statute passing. What's going to happen if the state of Oregon enacts this? My initial understanding was that it would encourage the enforcement against the buyer or the patronizer.
Yes, that's a very good question.
The prostitute. What's the risk?
That's a very good question. The city and any other authorities in the area arrest females over males, unfairly, unevenly, over males at considerable risk right now. and have since 1973. No female sellers have ever sued the city. That absolutely boggles my mind. I don't understand why not. Because they could, as long as the definition of prostitution, as it is right now, says that both the buyer and the seller are guilty. When the seller is the only one targeted, she does have a case at law against the city, against the authorities. She doesn't know it. These people are so beaten down and so undereducated and under-equipped and desperately trying to simply survive that it doesn't occur to them that they might have a case at law. But the law is there. You know, we couldn't pass the fact that a good law has disrespect visited on it doesn't make the law bad. It means that something has to be done about the people who are abusing that law. And all we have to do is, you know, if you pick up the phone, and I know you're busy to do this, but get a staff person to pick up the phone and call Vice Sergeant McCarthy on the Eugene, Oregon Police Department, he can explain to you why the current 167007 works superbly. They have virtually eliminated street prostitution. And I lived for many years in Eugene, and there was a significant problem. Now, the...